This podcast is brought to you by The Shift.
It's story time!
Hello and welcome back to the Storytime podcast. My name is Claire. I go by Clizair on the internet, and this is the podcast where people tell me their stories. And this week I have with me Kate McKenna. Hello. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Would you like to introduce yourself and tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Sure. So my name is Kate McKenna. I am an American that lives in Australia. So every time I introduce myself as living in Australia, people are just like, that doesn't make any sense. You don't sound like that. And sometimes they're disappointed. So I always have to clarify that. You can find me on the internet. I'm a writer also. You can find me on the internet at Kate McKen on Twitter, which is KaiteMckennn, no A.
Okay.
Yep.
And so I'll have the links down in the description on YouTube and in the show notes on the audio platform, so you can just scroll down and click rather than go searching. But yeah, you have a story for me today.
I sure do. So back in ye old 2006, way back, I am about 11 years old, and I started getting headaches all of the time. I'm saying, like, every single day at school, school nurse knew who I was, thought that I was trying to ditch class sort of thing. Had to go home a few times. And my mom brought me to the doctor and was just like, we don't know why she's getting headaches. What's going on? And my doctor was like, oh, she probably just needs glasses. So, you know, they bring me to the optometrist, they get glasses, whatever. Then a few years go by, I'm still getting headaches. And they're just like, oh, it must be stress. Like, maybe she's just stressed out. Keep in mind, at that point, 13 years old. They don't really get stress headaches. I mean, listen, I'm not going to speak for 13-year-olds or anything, but not normal. So a few more years go by, and I'm still getting headaches. And they're just like, all right, if you get a headache that wakes you up in the middle of the night, then we'll do an MRI. And I'm like, all right, waiting for it. A week goes by, I get a headache that wakes me up in the middle of the night. I tell my mom. They schedule an MRI at Children's Hospital in Boston. And then one day I'm coming home from field hockey practice. I'm, you know, a sophomore in high school, just chatting with my mom about the game.
What is a sophomore? I really should know this, but I don't. Is it the first year? The first year of secondary school, high school?
I think it depends where you, because, you know, it's the U.S. Everywhere's a little bit different. But for Massachusetts, it's this second year of high school.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And it turns out we got home and she lets me know that I have a condition called Chiari malformation.
Okay.
She didn't really have the language for it at the time, but eventually when I go to my neurosurgeon, he explains to me that essentially my skull, as I was getting older, wasn't developing properly. So the opening in the back of your head is called the foramen magnum. And it was underdeveloped in the sense that it was too small. So the cerebral spinal fluid that flows around your brain was causing me these headaches because my brain was in the wrong place and being pushed down. So I was getting all these headaches, and essentially I needed to get brain surgery. And, you know, bit of a life-changing thing to have to get surgery that young. And, you know, doctors don't exactly explain things to you even when you're 15 and when you get older. I got brain surgery for the first time on January 21st, 2011.
Wow. And so what is the surgery doing? Like making you... It's not making stop or anything, or what is it doing?
Yeah, so they basically, it depends on the severity of the case. But for me, they took a piece of my skull off. Basically just shaved it down.
To kind of create more space, is it?
Yeah. So that's kind of the objective with Chiari's. You're supposed to make more space so that the brain sits more comfortably and your cerebral spinal fluid starts flowing properly. so that, you know, your headaches go down and there's no more damage. So they did that, and they put like a mesh thing on the part they took off.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then I was in the hospital for about a week. And then I went home and I was off school. I want to say like 6 to 8 weeks. I don't remember specifics, but, yeah. So, I mean, it was one of those things, like I wrote my college essay about it. And it was like this defining factor in my life, but afterward, they didn't let me know anything about like, what to look out for if anything's going wrong or if I'm developing any other secondary conditions, because Chiari has a lot of secondary conditions that you can have associated with it. Like, spina bifida is one of the ones that is often, associated with Chiari, or, sometimes scoliosis as well. Just basically any muscular,
is that coming from the condition or coming from complications as a result of the surgery?
Those are just like associated conditions that you can have as well. There are complications that can happen from the surgery, like, cerebral spinal leaks or, is one of them. Yeah. There was this news story a couple
they
years ago.
They all sound serious.
Yeah. Like if you have a CSF leak, like it can come through your nose and it looks like you have like a runny nose, but it's brain fluid.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's freaks me out all of the time. Anytime I have any sort of runny nose, I'm just like, is this hay fever or am I dying?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, you know, years go by and I said to my doctor, my neurosurgeon at Children's, I was like, I don't think this actually worked because I'm still getting headaches and I'm not feeling 100%. And he was like, oh, no. It just takes like a year. Sometimes when you get surgery, when you're young, your body's not done growing and, you know, it can just feel bad. And I was like, all right. Cut to 2014. I'm in Los Angeles visiting my cousin. I'm at a jazz concert. I'm drinking wine. I'm smoking a thing that was not legal at the time. And, you know, I was in college and my roommate was with me and it was just a lovely June day in Los Angeles. And suddenly I started coughing, and in the middle of my chest, like in my sternum, I felt like I was having a heart attack. Like I thought that I was either having a heart attack or that I like broke a rib or broke my sternum or something. Because it was a sharp, sharp, sharp pain, like if you got shot by an arrow. And it was spreading through my chest, through my rib cage, down my arms. And every time I couldn't stop coughing, because I started choking on water or something. So, you know, I started blacking out and I was like, I need to go to the hospital. And my cousin's just like, all right, let's go to the hospital. They bring me to the hospital, and the American healthcare system, they gave me Vicodin and sent me on my way because I didn't know what was wrong with me.
And even with your history,
it's not like Chiari, it's not, Chiari isn't a rare condition now, not considered rare anymore because of MRIs and stuff. But it's not really well studied unless you're a specialist. And like it can be really frustrating because you can get misdiagnosed, which is what happened to me. Like I ended up going back to my doctor at home, my GP, and I told her what happened, and she was like, oh, either you have Lyme disease or gastrochondritis. And gastrochondritis is like a condition of where you're like, your nerves in your chest get inflamed because you get hit in the chest or something, like if you play sports or whatever. It goes away, whatever, not serious. And they tested me for Lyme disease. And at first I got a false positive and I was like, sick, I know what's going on. Lyme disease, whatever. I did not have Lyme disease. and it wasn't until a few years later again, where I was going to a neurologist because I was going to a psychologist in the same building. And they're like, oh, well, if you have Chiari and you haven't been checked out in a while, you should probably just go to the neurologist, especially if you're having these other weird conditions, these other symptoms. Because that sharp pain in my chest didn't go away totally. I still had the feeling that would go down my arms. It was like a burning feeling. And I sometimes, if I got a cough, the sharp pain would come back. So I went to that neurologist. He sent me off for an MRI, and he pulled, when I went in to get to talk to him about the MRI, it was this very dingy neurologist in Washington, D.C., because I was living in D.C. at the time. And he just pulled me into a side room, and he's like, okay, so you have a condition called syringomyelia. And I was like, haven't heard of her. Who is she? And he was just like, basically, you have a cyst in your spine that has caused damage to your spinal cord. And that's why you're getting all of this pain, because basically when you have syringomyelia, the condition itself is from my first surgery, because they didn't fully fix my Chiari in my first surgery, the pressure from the cerebral spinal fluid caused a cyst, they call it a syrinx, to form in my spinal cord, which is essentially when I was having that sharp pain, a part of my spinal cord was tearing, was ripping.
Wow.
And yeah, from the pressure. So then, you know, if it goes unchecked, the cyst grows. And basically at this point, mine is very, very long, most of my spinal cord. And
a cyst is the length of your spinal cord?
It's like, I wish I had a visual for it. I actually do, but it's like on my computer, but yeah. So it goes from my cervical spine, from like the top of my cervical spine to like halfway through my thoracic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's most of my spine. It's like has different parts that are bigger than others. But essentially, yeah, it's most of it.
Whoa.
Yeah. So this neurologist tells me that I need to go to a specialist again and get surgery again. And I didn't know where to stay because I was like an intern at the time. I had no money. And surgery is very expensive, especially if you have to take time off of work for like a month. So I ended up flying back to California, and the same cousin who was there when my symptoms first started, I stayed with her for almost a year while I was doing tests with a specialist surgeon who studies syringomyelia and Chiari. And yeah, so I had brain surgery again in 2017. So timeline again, I'm first symptomatic for syringomyelia in 2014. I don't even get surgery until 2017 because nobody had diagnosed me until 2017. So I'm in pain for 3 years because nobody knows what's going on and nobody really cares that much to find out. And yeah, so I had another surgery where essentially they went back into the first one, they revised it, they took out the mesh, because apparently that's medical malpractice now. Not supposed to use that anymore.
And, oh my gosh.
Yeah, there was like a whole lawsuit about it. Like, I don't know. Anyway, I was fine. So yeah, and they took like a graft out of my skull, off my scalp. So my scalp is numb now permanently. And
Your whole scalp?
The whole back. Like all right here, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's weird. It's really weird. Like anytime like my partner touches the back of my head, I'm like, I don't like that.
You can't really feel it, can you not?
Yeah, I mean, like, I can feel, like, your scalp is, like, a few different layers, right? Like, so, like, the top part, I can't feel. But, like, I can feel it, like, moving.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. You know someone's touching you.
Yeah, it just feels weird.
Yeah.
Like, if you have nerve damage anywhere, it's kind of, like, that feeling. Yeah, so, essentially, now, I have permanent nerve damage on my arms and in my neck, because of the cyst, because the cyst persists and is still there. Yeah, the surgery didn't fix it, which it was supposed to. It was supposed to collapse it, because if you relieve that pressure, it can naturally collapse depending on how bad the cyst is. But yeah, I went to I now have another specialist in Sydney who also just focuses on syringomyelia and Chiari. And I have to get another surgery now, where I will have a shunt put into my spinal cord and it will artificially drain the cyst and like into my stomach or something. Yeah, so they have to like cut into my spinal cord.
Oof.
Fun. Yeah.
You say it very calmly.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's one of those things you just kind of have to disassociate a little bit. You're just like, yeah. I'm not going to think about it. It's,
and like, yeah, the to be fair, like, I quite like the thing about surgery is, I know I've only ever had minor ones, but I was always very scared before my kind of first one. And then after that, I was like, ah, they knocked me out. I don't need to worry about what happens in there.
I'll think through it. Especially, yeah, like with my first surgery, my first brain surgery, I was so young and I had never had any, and nobody else in my family had either. Like, I mean, my mom, I'm one of six. So like my mom had gave birth a bunch, but other than that, like nobody had had such major surgery before. And so having brain surgery now, like thinking about it is kind of just like, oh yeah, that's just a thing that happens to me all the time. But the spine one freaks me out a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was I gonna say? Yeah, so basically now the way that it affects my day-to-day life is I have like flares where the burning sensation will like go down my arms and in my neck, and it's very painful, and I have to I'll have to like use like ice packs and stuff to like get it to calm down. I'm sure that there's some sort of medication I should be on for it. Not there yet on that one. And I don't have full motion of my neck. Like I can move it like this. Podcast or a visual medium. but yeah, I can only move it so much. Yeah, I mean, I still get headaches and I'm losing my hearing a little bit, which can happen with Chiari sometimes. And so, yeah, I'll probably lose that prematurely eventually. But yeah.
And yeah, so do you know, like you mentioned that you're one of six, do you know like why, or is there any kind of reason why like you've gotten this condition?
So okay, so this is a bit of a controversial area, because so some people think, well, controversial in the community, right?
Some people in the medical think, community
in the medical community, yeah. Doctors are going to listen to this and come after me. but can you imagine? That'd be great. No, but there's some people think it's hereditary, but no one in my family. My dad is one of 17, so I wow. would. Yeah, yeah. Irish Catholic family. very, very traditional in that way. Don't know what birth control is. Anyway, but yeah, nobody. Nobody on his side has it. And my mom's was adopted, so I don't know anything about her side. But otherwise, there's some theories where they think it's just like a developmental thing that just happens because you like didn't grow properly. Some people may think, and they're doing studies about this now, I think, if you were born with your cord wrapped around your neck, it can like maybe indent the back of your head. And I was born with the cord wrapped around my neck, so it checks out on that one. But wow. Yeah.
Which I feel like, but, I feel like there's, I don't want to say a lot of babies, but I feel like that's a relatively common-ish, because I think I have a friend who was born with the cord wrapped around her neck as well.
Yeah. I mean, for some people with Chiari too are just completely asymptomatic. Same with stringomalia actually. There's really? Yeah, so if you can have a tiny cyst in your spinal cord and not know it at all, because some people can get it acquired. There's like two different categories of it, which I don't have acquired one. Mine's from my Chiari, but some people who get into like car accidents can develop stringomalia from damage to their back or whatever, and some it really with Chiari though, a lot of people, it's more common in women as well. Yeah, so keep that on the, if you're getting headaches a lot, just get that checked out. Yeah, some people, they don't know until they're in their like 30s or 40s, because they're just not symptomatic until then, like after kids or whatever, and you put a lot of pressure on your spine. So
wow. Mm. Well, best of luck with your next surgery.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's funny how having that sort of thing can change your life, though, because like when I was on bed rest for my second surgery, I was like in Los Angeles. I didn't really know anybody, so I spent a lot of time online on Facebook groups. And I joined this Facebook group where that was just for my favorite band, the Mountain Goats. And, you know, I met a lot of people through there who were just from all over. And that's actually how I met my partner and how I moved to Australia, because I was online a lot and we would like do things together, like fundraisers and stuff for different charities. And one time we were doing a fundraiser for an abortion charity and an abortion charity a reproductive justice fund, so to say, to support abortion clinics. And my partner donated money to it and I added him on Facebook. And then, you know, a couple months later he came and visited me in LA, and he had the lead singer of the band like play a song for me when I wasn't there because I couldn't make it to the concert because I was having brain surgery. Yeah. And then I moved to Australia like 5 months after my surgery.
That's actually interesting. Was that like a big consideration to move away from? I don't know, like whether or not you think the healthcare is better in either or, but like you were in the system, I suppose, in America. Was it really scary? And what did you have to like figure out before you decided to make that move?
Yeah. So I had to see my surgeon before I moved. I had two surgeons actually, because my initial one is like 90, so he can't really perform surgery anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. You probably shouldn't.
He probably just tells the other people what to do.
Well, that's exactly what he does. Actually, he'll stand in like the theater, and he'll watch them and just be like, "Be careful to do this. Be careful to do that." Yeah, so I met with them beforehand and they were like, you should be fine. And they gave me a referral, an informal referral to a Chiari specialist in Sydney. And that's who I go to now. Because they all know each other because they all go to these neurosurgeon.
Yeah. I'd say it's very specialized. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just out of curiosity, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but just in terms of like healthcare, because America is a very different system, doesn't it, than Australia?
Yeah. So, I mean, I have thought about this a lot, right? And so the US healthcare system is obviously a mess, right? Like, yeah. I think everybody knows that now. It's an open secret, not so much secret, well covered topic. And I liked my doctors for the most part. I mean, obviously not a huge fan of my first surgeon because he bullshitted me. It was just like, hey, you're fine. And it's like, yeah, but you didn't actually do the thing you were supposed to. I find the GPs in Australia a little bit more difficult because there's no time limit on GPs in the US. So like, if I go to my GP, I mean, I don't know if this is the case for everybody, but if I go to my GP at home, I'm just there until they like, you know, give me a conclusion to whatever I'm in there for. Whereas in Australia, you have like 15 minute appointments, 30 minute appointments, hour appointments. But it's also way more affordable, right? Like I have access to Medicare now. Like I just got permanent residency here. So
oh, wow,
I can use Medicare. Thank you so much. It was a huge deal. And I, you know, can move freely between countries now as well. But yeah, I mean, my specialist here is at a private hospital, which is very frustrating because I feel like I'm, you know, back to the U.S. issues.
The insurance strategy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but that being said, so for transparency, for people who are curious, my surgery in L.A. was $60,000.
Woof.
Yeah, it was like 65 or something like that before insurance. And my surgery here at a private hospital is 32, I think, which is still a lot of money.
I mean, it's still a lot of money, but also then I think, is the US dollar stronger than the Aussie dollar? Or are you talking in dollar in Australian dollars and
bonds? That's actually a very good point. In US dollars, my surgery is like 20 something.
That's a huge difference. Especially when you have to pay, like whether or not it's insurance covered, etc. It's a huge difference. Premium wise, that would make a big difference.
Yeah, I tried to, because of COVID, so I actually didn't go to my neurosurgeon here until I had to. So for anybody who doesn't know about the Australian immigration system, bit of a mess as well.
Oh, really?
Not exactly the most. They make you go through hell to stay. Less so if you're trying to get a partner visa. If you're trying to get a skilled visa, it is very difficult. I'm obviously really privileged because I'm American and it's easier to get documents that you need from the government in the US, unless COVID's happening and you have to yell at the FBI. wouldn't recommend that. So part of your permanent residency application in Australia, you have to do a medical exam. And if you have any pre-existing conditions, they can declare you like not suitable. That happens to people all the time, actually.
Oh my God.
Yeah. There was a huge story about it here, I think last year, where families who have kids with disabilities were getting denied.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's just like what kind of system is that, right?
Yeah, that's a decision solely based on numbers on a page and not on humanity.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time you can appeal it if it's medical. I know somebody who got a friend of a friend who got denied because she got cancer during her application process.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and got kicked out and had to go. I think she was from Indonesia, I want to say. I'm sure she appealed it. She could have tried to appeal it, but I imagine getting cancer, she's just like, fuck it, I'll just go home. Yeah. It's like not worth it. Yeah. I had to go to. I only had to go to my neurosurgeon because the Australian government made me go. I try to avoid it when I can because it is annoying to have to sit in an MRI machine once a year. So part of this is my fault not taking care of myself. But that's how I found out I had to get surgery again because he was like, your assist is not great. Yeah. And he... if you leave syringomyelia untreated, in worst case scenario, you can be paralyzed.
Oh my God.
Big part I left out there. For example, in my case, when he looked at my cyst, if my cyst ruptures in another area, because I have two like really big parts of it, it kind of looks like a Q-tip.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, if that second one bursts, then I can lose feeling in my arms permanently.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And you know what? If I had to pick one half, I'd much rather lose feeling in my legs. It is so inconvenient to not have arms that are fully functional. Like, I would happily take a wheelchair over that, you know?
It'd be a big learning curve, to not have, yeah.
Yeah, so I have to get the surgery within 4 years now to make sure that doesn't happen. He said if I need to get it within 5 years because he thinks that it could rupture in that time. Because for example, if I got COVID and I was coughing all of the time, that
oh my God, yeah,
yeah, it's kind of special. Case because usually when you think of people who can't get COVID, it's people who have like autoimmune conditions or like lung issues. But if you have a cyst in your spine that could rupture from coughing, don't get that. Stay in your house. Stay inside.
Well, it's actually lucky then that you are in Australia and not America or Ireland or somewhere that's not dealing with COVID as well as Australia seemed to have done well.
It's their vaccine rollout is a bit shite, but otherwise,
yeah, New Zealand's not great either, isn't it? Not, and Ireland is terrible.
they just opened the travel bubble here, and then they like immediately had a case at the airport.
Yeah, I figured that was gonna happen, but
yeah, it's like, how could this possibly go wrong? But yes, no, I am very lucky, especially because like most of my family's from New York. So that was really stressful for a while.
Oh God, yeah, New York was the hub, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all my older family members live on Long Island. So really zeroing in on that. And all of my immediate family members work in like retail and
wow,
they essential workers essentially. So yeah, but now hopefully things are rounding the corner and I'm very lucky that I didn't get COVID and I've been staying inside and people have been very respectful with that. So it's good on that front.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing your story and best of luck with your next surgery.
Thank you. It'll be something.
Can you remind everyone where to find you on the internet so they can keep updated on how you're doing?
Yes, hello. I am at Kate McKenna or Kate McKen on Twitter, KAITEMCKENN.
And I will have all the links in the description on YouTube. Ooh. And in the show notes and the audio platforms. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Thank you, Kate, for joining me and sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Shift. For more like this, check out theshift.ie.